Blog Talk Radio. Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio showcases diverse voices from around the globe. Today we celebrate World Poetry Day 2020. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram. Enjoy.
Welcome to the program. Today I am joined by four acclaimed poets, Indran Amanaya Thiagam, Christine DeLuca, Jaime Manrique, and Sophia Nas. And Mervyn Taylor. These renowned artists are here to help us celebrate World Poetry Day. I turn it over to my friend, Indran.
Good afternoon, Michael. Thrilled to be with you. All right. So shall I shoot off a poem?
Yes, please.
All right. This one's from a few days ago. It's called Pigeon Fly. Pigeon fly out of the city sky, into the waiting room of the Greyhound bus, Port Authority, midday gray, leaving New York, not for the first time. No, now, there are many centers, magnets, points of light, and I will come back as long as the pigeon flies. I wrote that little poem on leaving New York before the world changed forever.
Yes.
As you know, we're going through this global emergency right now regarding the COVID-19. And so it's on all of our minds. And I want to try another little very new poem for you. It's called The Equalizer. And I'd like to dedicate to Jaime Manrique, who told me the story. You want to hear it?
Yes.
All right, The Equalizer. He was a hero of our independence in Colombia, fearless, brave. He lost an arm but kept on struggling. He lost a leg, did not stop him. 2 ears, but he managed still to fight on. He caught a cold, then he expired of the cold. So keep sanctimony to a minimum, please. Take care of that sniffle. And if your throat is dry and your head on fire, pull out your cutlass and slash the air before you, screaming, "Get out of my country, foreign body, get out." Napoleon's cousin, skin with yellow fever, expired in Saint-Domingue, and the Haitian Revolution thrived. The virus slays all sides. That's that one.
Very nice.
You know. Yeah, slays the rich and the poor, the high
yes.
and the mighty and the low, everyone. So we got to be careful. I agree.
Yes.
So what is World Poetry Day, man? This is a day for us to coming to terms with our reality through this wonderful gift that we have to the gift of music, word music, you know.
Share a bit about who you are and what this day again means to you.
Well, you know, it's like coming to America for me, you know. It's a celebration. It's a day of saying welcome and thank you and I'm making a new home. Poetry is it's a special language. It's a sacred language. It's a sweet dancing language. It's something. It's as I said, it's word music. So, world poetry celebrates that. Celebrates the meeting of idea and feelings in musical speech, and that's what I love about poetry. It's the capturing the music of the spheres in language. you know. And now there's all kinds of poetry, I know, and we quarrel and we debate and we think about, you know, well, this poetry as opposed to that poetry. But at least where I come from, poetry is song in words. It's words danced on a page. And that's what I like to celebrate today,
right,
on this World Poetry Day. I want to add something else. You know, I've got a new book coming out called The Migrant States. So it's both the migrant stating or speaking, and it's also about the United States. So coming to America, the migrant story is not only my story. It's the reality of so many millions of people around the world, constantly on the move from their original homes and looking for shelter, looking for posada, you know, looking for a dwelling. And so I try to capture that story in this book. Do you want to hear the preface? It's a short little prose poem.
Yes, please. Whatever you like to share.
All right. Migrants are on the move, while our earth is staggering, roiling and rolling, drunk on human breath. We're living in the middle of the emergency, and some of us will not be able to escape. The seas rise and boil. Brush fires move at a lightning clip. Heavy, sooty swats of Delhi air penetrate masks and decorum, silting lungs with a slow accumulation of poisons. As if our lungs, the breathing tubes, the billows of our lives, have become a burial pit, the sand thrown in. So what does the migrant state? 200 years after Walt Whitman set off from Pomonok, this is what his descendants find along the road. Democracy sputters, stutters. Can we survive the current surreal comedy where words, the raw material of poetry, have been spun, propagated as propaganda that threatens, as Orwell predicted, to make lies into truth, war into peace? I would add the jobs of reporter, poet, witness, as suspect now as they were in Plato's mind when he tried to create his exclusive republic. Yet I admire Plato because I champion free speech, the free mind. Let him have his republic, only let me state my poetry. We need open borders everywhere, open borders of the mind, of languages. We need to cross over at points, at ports of entry, with our dancers, tongues, poems, and gods. So pack your bag for the trip. I invite you to put these poems in an outer pouch, easy to grab and show at customs. In my words, sir, there are no vegetable products, no animal residues, no contraband. They are here to wake up essences, dreams, memories, to tell stories of where people come from and the disputes, struggles, successes they encounter along the way. And they offer an affirming flame, attempt to speak truth to power, and I believe can be useful in the most important fight of our time, that of reducing our footprint, our ecological stain. We must take care of air, water, and earth, become really worthy stewards, care for all other living beings with whom we share the ecosystem. We are not kings or dictators, and thankfully we have a system, that least bad of systems, according to Mario Vargas Llosa, but ours, the one Whitman discovered walking abroad from Pomonok, the one these poems reaffirm in these migrant states. So that's how I sort of set off the argument of the book. And then Walt Whitman shows up, and Allen Ginsberg, and other heroes who have helped shape this particular voice, this particular path. And just very grateful today on World Poetry Day for having had the chance to write and to keep writing
and sharing the poems. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I heard a click and I was wondering what that was. Okay.
Please share another.
I will, let's see. This one's called, This Is No Time for Criticism. I realize my lines are not lyrical. They have no surprising leaps or rhythmic epiphanies. They are flat, a body shot on the street, visited by paramedics, wailing young men and women. We do not discriminate in 2019. We are witnessing birth of a revolt, a rejection. And you say my verse is agitprop, an unfit exercise for poetry. I reply writing that the body must be buried with dignity and surviving family paid. As for the healing of decades old wounds opened up again by a tank trundling into the center of the city, I offer my pen as a bulletproof vest, immune to criticism, resistant like an ear of wheat in the wind, an eagle brushing off the fur of a mouse from its wings. Who is looking down on us now, my friend? Who is saying, shut the bloody fuck up and write truly hermetic poetry? Yeah. I mean, again, the tent is large and, you know, I contain multitudes, as Whitman wrote in Leaves of Grass. But I do prefer the poetry that is clear and intelligible on to the ear the first time and or the second time. So hermetic poetry, dense poetry is also my interest, but not quite by a particular road, you know?
Yes.
I'm aware that I'm of gratitude today, gratitude for this spring that here in Washington we're experiencing. I know these are bizarre times with the emergency about COVID-19, but the cherry blossoms are blossoming and birds are flying in the early morning through the branches and the sun is out. So no matter how scared or panicked we are, we have these reminders of gentle reminders of life and affirming life around us. So we need to be strong, take our precautions and embrace this this life. It's precious. We will overcome. I sound like Churchill, but we will overcome this panic and this virus. Anyway, thank God for poetry. I don't know if there's time for another, but if there is,
I will. There's time.
And there was time. You know, there are a number of poems where Walt Whitman is a character here, and in one of those, it's called Walt 200, written on the 200th birthday of Walt Whitman last year. Walt 200, break the locks, unleash the mind. Walt Whitman has left Pomonok. He is abroad. He is sitting among us in our soul. He flies the post with pigeons and the giant freight planes. He hops freight trains and rides it to Mexico. He's on a P&O cruise visiting St. Kitts and Barbados. He has joined the merchant marine. He sails into Guantanamo. He throws fish into the sea in search of whales. He has the biggest, longest beard in the world. He jives, thrives, cavorts, shimmers. He is 200 years old today, and he does not give a flying rat. He is in your mind, Mr. President, even if you cannot smother or scratch or squeeze him out. He is gloriously spirit, gadfly, rabbit, and sloth. He nurses our democratic wounds. He knows how to write history from the pebble's view, the side glance of the wren, the snake hanging in the tree. He is black and white and all shades of gray.
He is our friend and guide, and he will elect us every time we fall down. Let us go back to Pomonok with what we've learned these 200 years. Let us go back to set forth again. Walt Whitman in our backpack. So let us give birth to Walt Whitman again, and let us set forth, despite all the travel restrictions.
All right. I'd like to bring in your colleagues.
Yes, please.
Just for their comments so far, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Let's see.
Yes, I'm here. Oh, you're waiting for me. Okay.
No, not waiting for you. Just wanted to bring you into the conversation as we talk about World Poetry Day.
Sure.
Bring in Sophia.
Yes, hi.
Hello, just general
I'm
comments
here.
About what's happening so far. And I got one other voice here. Hold on one moment. Good afternoon. This is Michael.
Yeah, this is Constantine. I'm a spoken word poet as well. I listen to your show, but
right.
You can't call in.
Who can't call in?
I said I normally can't call in this time of day.
Okay.
But because of all the scare, you know, I'm not disposed at the moment. Working, so I'd be happy to listen or comment or anything that you'd allow me to.
Okay, your name is Constantine.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. All right.
My
Any
pleasure.
Thoughts so far, good people, of what we're hearing in terms of World Poetry Day, the works from Indran?
I really enjoy Indran's poetry, especially I love it because it's warm, it's expansive. It's the epitome of someone who is genuinely empathetic and believes in the universality of our humanity. So it's always a delight to hear him read, especially because of this special quality that he believes in poetry to be accessible. And it's in this day and age when, you know, it seems that a lot of poets are sort of elitist in one sense or the other, I find that very refreshing. He's truly someone who's the salt of the earth, so to speak.
Thank you, Sophia. That's very kind. Very kind.
Thank you, Sophia.
Yeah, I certainly find that word music was an interesting metaphor. I think as we wordsmiths weave our tales, and I seem to go to another place. It takes me another place. It transforms me. It moves me. It guides me into another state of mind, state of being, and being the conductor on that trip, sir. You did quite a wonderful job, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Constantine, where are you calling in from?
At the moment, I'm in Abilene, Texas. That's right.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. All right. Indran, would you like to continue?
Sure. How about this one called Musicians in Exile? It has a short epigraph. David, we must talk. I, too, founded a punk band with my best friends. We called ourselves The End. The last time we played together was 1981 in the basement of a dorm at Haverford College. We also have a close buddy, Colin Potts, who wrote two of the songs. He's a tourist guide in Chester, England. The lead guitarist, Sig, of Latvian and Connecticut stock, plays guitar at night in Berlin. Richard, the one-man band, Brautigan is guru, lives now in Hong Kong, where he banks and jots anarchic wit in social media blasts.
Kenny drums in South Florida after doctoring during the day, and I write poems, sometimes lyrics, and dream that we will play together again before the Reaper claps and Lazarus closes his book to those who gave up the game, the good fight to eliminate the DMZ, the wall, to bring the end back to the beginning, where the body is wiry, the hair long, and the dream fresh in the shot glass on the counter at Roach and O'Brien's, in the glass hanging on Mrs. William Burroughs' head. Wrong myth. We were Quakers, pacifists back then. Not sure now. We have not spoken in a while. Once a Quaker, always a Quaker. Once a bum, rolling, musical wheel, talking drum. Nobody can shut us up. Nobody can say the end will die again. Not in this poem. Not on stages of Berlin or Hong Kong. Not in Washington, D.C., where I publish this call for tryouts. The production will be grand. Cover the planet. We want versatile and committed actors who sing, dance, play drums, guitars, cowbells, who find pleasure even in exile. That was Musicians in Exile. You know, we all had our moments. You know, I think of Yeats's 1919, where he wrote, "We who 7 years ago talked of honor and of truth, now shriek with pleasure at the weasel's twist, the weasel's tooth." That halcyon innocence, those days when we formed a band and were vigorous and had and visions of a kind of how should I put it, a paradise, and yet that those memories stay with us, and the search for paradise still motivates us, no matter how wizened we are, or how cynical we can become or have become, because without that search for paradise, our lives become shall we say, colorless or lifeless or bleary. Again, on this World Poetry Day, let's renew our vows. Let's renew the purpose. Let's contribute to reducing the footprint. You know, the irony, of course, of this crisis with COVID-19 is that we are reducing our footprint. Emissions are down worldwide. And we have to find a way, a less traumatic way to find the balance, you know, a less traumatic than having this mysterious virus interfere with our growth patterns and our play and our socializing. But we have to find that balance, and poetry can play a role in waking up conscience and in renewing purpose. So I feel optimistic today, despite everything being so chaotic around.
All right. Well, thank you, Indran, for sharing your wonderful work.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
We are back. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. We're with Celebrated Poets. The next poet is Jaime. You're on, Jaime.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, thank you for inviting me to your program. It's a delight to be with you and the wonderful poets that you've invited to this station event. I'm going to read most of my poetry has been translated into English by Edith Grossman, who translated Don Quixote and, you know, other works. But lately I've written a few poems myself in English. And so I'll read some of her translations and some of the poems I've written myself in English. This one is one of the poems I wrote in English, and it's about a trip I took to Algeria in 2007. And I ended up going to a city called Oran, they called, where Albert Camus was born. And but I was there on other business, researching Cervantes. But anyway, I began to think about Camus when I was there. And now with this coronavirus, and you know, like maybe I thought, oh, maybe I should. Publish this poem or something, because it's about it, this is novel, The Plague. And so here it goes. The Stranger. Dusk descends on the plaza, coated with desert dust. We sit under the solitary tree and drink coffee out of miniature cups half filled with sugar. The hour is swollen with jasmine. Bands of swallows swirl above us like airborne carpets in the darkening sky. The ruined buildings around the plaza are not Roman but colonial French, the language spoken by the men in twos and threes, around us, sitting at metal tables on iron chairs. This is the time of day when Dr. Rieu, in Camus' The Plague, would open the door to his empty apartment. Far away, his wife is convalescing. Rieu heads straight for the bathroom and soaps his hands that all day long have handled dying Oranians. But the doctor cannot wash away the stench of death all over himself. I haven't come to Oran looking for Camus, who is hated here. He was on the wrong side of history, or was he? I'm about to remark on this to my companion when, faintly at first, I hear a voice not meant for us, but instead for heaven, a flute-like prayer rising from the speaker attached to the golden tip of the mosque. Is it the appearance of the pole star in the wine-blue sky the voice sings? In 4 days, my mother will be dead. Okay. So that's a poem that I wrote in 2007. But now I want to read one poem maybe from my book, My Night with Federico Garcia Lorca, which is a translation by Edith Grossman. And this poem happens to be my most popular poem in the United States. It's in many websites, and so, you know, I don't know, I don't understand why it is so popular, but I hear it. The sky over my mother's house. It is a July night scented with gardenias. The moon and stars shine, hiding the essence of the night. As darkness fell with its deepening onyx shadows and the golden brilliance of the stars, my mother put the garden, her house, the kitchen, in order. Now, as she sleeps, I walk in her garden, immersed in the solitude of the moment. I have forgotten the names of many trees and flowers, and there used to be more pines where orange trees flower now. Tonight, I think of all the skies I have pondered and once loved. Tonight, the shadows around the house are kind. The sky is a camera obscura, projecting blurred images. In my mother's house, the twinkling stars pierce me with nostalgia, and each thread in the net that surrounds this world is a wound that will not heal. Okay, Maybe I'll read one more from that book. Some of the poems are about my infancy when I was a child in Colombia, and my family, the members of my family. So it's a very, you know, it's a very autobiographical book in many ways. And this one is called Mambo. Against the topaz sky and huge windows starry with delirious heart's ease and sensual red cayenne, the sweet twilight breeze fragrant with almond and Indian orange on the Moorish tiles, wearing their spike heel shoes, low-cut dresses, and wide swirling skirts, their obsidian hairdos in the style of the time, perfume, olive skin, smiling. My aunts danced the mambo and sang, "Doctor, tomorrow you can't pull my tooth even if I died of the pain." Those evenings of my childhood, when my aunts were young and belonged to me, and I danced hiding in their skirts, our lives were a happy mambo, I remember. All right, so that's like, and maybe I'll read the Lorca poem, because it's a title poem. It's called My Night with Federico Garcia Lorca. It's not My Night with Federico Garcia Lorca. Of course, I would be 300 years old now, but it's a poet, French poet, who told me about a night of love he spent with Federico Garcia Lorca. And it's told by Edward Roditi, the poem. Roditi. It happened in Paris. Pepe asked me over to dinner to meet a guy named Federico, who was on his way to New York. I was 19 years old. Federico was 11 years older and had finished a relationship in Spain with a sculptor who had been rotten to him. Federico only had two lovers. He hated promiscuous queens. We were both Gemini. Since astrology was very important to him, Federico took an interest in me. We spoke in Spanish and had learned from my grandmother, a Sephardic Jew, who had taught me 16th century expressions. Federico was amused by all this. We drank a lot of wine that night. In the morning, when I woke up, his head lay across my nipples. Hundreds of people have asked me for details. Was Federico fabulous in bed? I always give them my standard answer. Federico was emotional and vulnerable. For him, the most important thing wasn't sex, but tenderness. I never saw him again. The following day, he left for England, then New York and Cuba. Later, the second love of his life was murdered defending the Republic. All this happened in Paris almost 60 years ago. It was just a night of love, but it has lasted all my life. Okay, so I'll read a very short poem, as a few lines from my second book of poems, and this is a translation by Margaret Sayers Peden, who's also very, she translated Pedro Páramo and a lot of books by Latin American writers. And it's called Poetry. The mystery of poetry, according to Stephen Crane, is that a man can address the universe and the universe will answer him. That's the point. And I'll end with a couple of other poems. Poems I'm going to read now, The Stranger, are poems that have not appeared in a book. I have to put it together, a book of poems at some point, and I'm beginning to pull them out of the, you know, whatever I've left them for years, gathering dust. So this one, the book is going to be called Don Quixote. And it's like, it's my obsession with Don Quixote. I wrote a novel about Cervantes, the author of Don Quixote. So, you know, I thought that to write a book of mine, Don Quixote by Jaime Manrique, but these are just poems. And this is Don Quixote speaking. Don Quixote, I woke up. It was the hour of nocturnal terrors. My head still on my pillow, in the unsettling darkness of my room, I thought, I am old. I couldn't go back to sleep. I slipped my bony toes in my slippers, ragged and threadbare like the life I'd lived. Like so many nights of late, I wrapped a blanket around my shivering frame, opened the door of my room, and slipped out of the hush house. Outside, the ground was damp, the night abloom with stars, screaming silently as they fell toward God knows where, but certainly far from my barren fields, from the barren and owl, from the barren and owls gulls there questioned me. Not my presence in the lateness of the night, but my entire existence. Spring was near. I could feel the ground turning under my feet. Then a second thought occurred to me. Soon I'll be dead. Soon my flabby flesh, my brittle bones, my dried up brain will be enriching the soil, the earth. The earth will be my roof, daisies, my constellations. No, this cannot be the end, I heard myself say. There has to be more to life than all the stories I've read, everything I haven't seen or felt, the hardness of my cold bed. It was then the idea came to me. I must take to the open road to redress the grievances, rectify the wrongs, amend the errors, and reform the abuses in the world. Before it gets late, I added, I have to find love. It took a few days to prepare before I rode away on my Rocinante, my neighbor Sancho for my squire, and the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso as the compass of my loveless heart. The rest of the story is well known, but what has never been written about before was that instant when I woke up in my frigid bed, stepped out in the chilly dawn, and felt worms stirring the ground under me, reminding me I had one more spring to live, and it was my duty to live it. And then finally, the last poem I'll read is called The Patio of the House on 58th Street. The 58th Street is the street where I lived in my city, Barranquilla, Colombia, when I was an adolescent. And so from the time I was like 10 years old until I was 17 when I came to the United States, I lived there. And it's a poem about my mother. I've written a lot of poems about my mother, and I think they're very nice and lovely, but my mother used to say, stop writing nasty poems about me. She said, my mother, the nicest things I've written, and so she refused to read one of my poems ever, because she had her people referred about to them that I wrote about her. The patio of the house on 58th Street. In my mother's room, one window looked out over the alley where we raised ducks, the other opened on the patio with its planting trees and yuccas where chickens, doves, and rabbits were being fattened for our table. At the back of the patio, above the high wall, clumps of branches spill over from mango and orange trees belonging to our neighbors on 57th Street. I remember my mother, propped in the window, looking at the patio's black sand, like a Tahitian woman painted by Gauguin, her glowing eyes hypnotized by the dark jungle where the wild cat from her childhood roamed during the night. My mother rested her hands on the window frame so that breezes could dry the pink varnish she had just applied to her nails. It would be around 4 o'clock, a dead hour, halfway between daylight and the approaching darkness. It is a dark and freezing night in New York. I sit myself down facing the window of time in order to see what my mother can no longer see. Before me opens the long road of our lives, the stations and stops of trains and buses where we get out, at the house where we live, other patios with different fruit trees and animals. And I contemplate with weakened eyes my mother's final destination, hers, not mine, because my eyes can only see the past, not the dark current of time as it swallows me up. Okay. Thank you. The end.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to bring your colleagues in for comments.
What a pleasure to hear you, Jaime, read these essential poems. You know,
historical poems and to sort of hear your obsessions with Don Quixote, with Garcia Lorca. Those good obsessions to have. And
Thank you. Can I say something about you, Indran?
You're welcome.
I've read, I think, like 5,000 poems by Indran. He sends me at least 10 poems every day. He writes at least 10 poems every single day and wants my comments. I've read, you know, I think more over 5,000 poems of his.
Jaime, that was supposed to be our little secret.
Well, now it's out in the open.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll be right back.
All right.
Celebration, I'd like to bring on Sophia Nas.
Hello, Michael. Thank you for having me at World Poetry Day. It's such a pleasure to be invited, you know, with such wonderful poets. And it's truly, truly an honor to be here. Hello?
Yes. Please start whenever you like.
Okay. So it's finally raining here in California. We had a very worrisome February. And even though we're in the grips of COVID-19, the larger threat to the planet is climate change. And I lost my home to climate change, this is now 3 years ago. And so I'm just happy that it is raining. And so my first poem is a short poem. It's titled Raining. The rain is remembrance by another name. It is the droplet remembering the sigh it rose from, the seed remembering the form that gave it birth. Lovers remembering their mouths are taverns of kisses. The aged remembering legs leaping in puddles. The rain is remembrance by another name. It is always raining in a poet's heart. So that was raining, I'm going to continue with another poem, which is titled Hands. I know everyone's obsessed with hand washing now that we are in the grips of the pandemic. So this one was written before the pandemic, but it's about hands and the possibilities latent therein. Hands. If your hands could smell, you'd be an octopus. Every surface sent a million stories. The stealthy stickiness of slugs would seep, epics in the drama of the underbrush, melting stalagmites show and tell in your digits. Earth as Memnosony. If your hands could smell, the suck of subway cars would stop you dead in your tracks, to decode teeming conduits, lighting up nosegays on your fingers, newborn bouquets, archaic attar. Each night, etymology of odor would allure you, greedy as Prometheus, unable to steal the summer of a firefly, the distant musk of a star. If your hands could smell, you'd speak in canine, each pole and passing bush whisper, each sniff you'd get the snitch of neighborhood carousing in high fidelity, until weary of invisible graffiti, scroll of metropolis unfolding in endless olfactory braille, you'd head for the woods, hoping trees were not such talkers, or at least would shoot the breeze between sentences. How long did you walk? It's hard to tell, but when you fell, palms down, cupped, hollow as a flute upon the ground, you understood how the void makes music possible. And history had it wrong. It was not Earth who bore witness. It was your hands all along. Hello?
Yes, it's beautiful.
Thank you. So, like Indran, I'm also an immigrant. I came to the U.S. Some 32 years ago. And since then, I've made my home first in New York and then in California. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I lost my home to the wildfires caused by climate change some 3 years ago in 2017. So this is a poem which is called Aftermath. And it's part of my new book, which is called Zero Period, which is a poem written after I lost my home to the wildfire. Aftermath. The calculus that what's beyond the hill must be left at memory's table. A feast not meant to be eaten, but pierced at the precise point which leads smoothly into the needle's nose, hugs the thread snug, so thought fleshed out desiccates, but doesn't fall like meat tendering a resignation. The trees are bereft of berries now. You would have paused to pick them, grasping at branches just beyond your reach, and knees would bruise, ripe as a summer's peach disappears, leaving only a sunset stain in the corner of sky's wordless mouth. Falls moist mist almost dissipated. Only wisps of stubborn weed cling to the hill. Sides of a bird, her feathers ostrich brown, akin to you, whose head swims in the sand. The drought has dealt you well, you dwell in doubts. The hill still beckons. Almost against your will, you are walking. Woodpeckers on tap to open up the trapdoors, char as far as the eye can roam, sinew of auburn manzanitas burned and hacked to pieces. Reel after reel, you can't unsee the forest's depth. A silent movie plays on. The orchestra, a hollow pump, fist of an organ, thumping on and on, you walk to the top, the slope abruptly condescending. The price extracted in perspiration's penance, paid you richly in coin. In kind, you preened to the plumes as a peacock dancing in the rain would scatter a myriad eyes. Their blue, made not of borrowed pigment, but of bent light, reflecting ways of seeing nothing, multiplying a hall of mirrors and a single flame. The last house on a dead-end road would rise up to fill your eyes. First the roundabout, full with aloe and well-fed quills of succulents. Then the porch, overhung with ivy, so thick even envy would pale away like winter sun. Shining where it once stood, where you stand on scarred earth, scabbed into scrub as if after many blows a giant had fallen, and through the fresh gap tooth of his maws you saw the valley yawn wide, felt something give as the waters rushed in. So that was my poem about what happened after I lost my home. Losing my home is, made me feel very keenly how a personal loss is just a tiny molecule of the immense loss that we face as we are really in this, slow-moving and at times really fast-moving climate emergency. And so I've been writing from the personal loss has been stemming an ever-increasing awareness of collective loss. And where I am is it's completely inescapable because, it's not only me that lost the house and the entire neighborhood burnt out, vast swaths of, everybody. Where I'm reading right now, I'm in a trailer, all around me is a slow and painful rebuilding, but, huge, swaths of my neighborhood are just nothing. They're not there anymore. So, there was a funny thing that happened recently in the news. There was a news about a woman who went to the emergency room in Korea, and they found bees living in her eyes. And so I wrote a short poem about that. It's called The Last Beekeeper. The last beekeeper. Bees are living in my eyes. They feed on my tears all day and through the cold black night. I can hear them buzzing as they mill my dreams to honey, hum incessantly in the rag reserved for species on the brink of becoming extinct. I blink the bleak milk back, lachrymose to the core at the thought of being this ocular cave hole, last recourse of Apis mellifera as a dying planet, toxic from sweltering berry to melting poles, runs the last lap in its course. And another one of my poems is something that seems particularly apt at the moment when, in the grips of this pandemic, we have been talking about social distancing. So this one is called The Lesson. The lesson is something to be learned from loneliness, the curve of each day shot across the bow. Do neglected bouquets know that the heart is nothing like a rose? Both tropes so overused it bears repeating, like twin petals of the beat itself. 1-2, 1-2 to score, music of the four-chambered maze. Close those eyes, their bright windows to peruse. A rhizome, continuous, profuse, subterranean stem. The eye seeping seamlessly into them. Listen, there's a lovely violin to the east, red neckline of the rising sun, and standing still, still standing, remnants, relics of the elders, bay laurel, oak, redwood, manzanita, frozen in a paused narrative, retreating as touch-me-nots into winter, permanent char, staining time's elastic. At 11, the mountains take off their cloud crowns. Lizards belie alliterations of nursery rhymes to do push-ups. Rise and fall, and then the lull. Something breaks and something bends. Where's the learning in all this? I leave the page open for you to guess. So that was the lesson.
All right.
This being World Poetry Day, I wrote a poem which is called Profession. I could have been a chemist, but no alembic captures cry of a broken bulbul in a calligraphic gesture. No loom to weave peeling, cartwheeling remembrance and happenstance to knit synonym or tourniquet. Daily hemorrhage of sun, set arise from writ of east. Instead of mapping metaphor, I should have been a baker. But look, a bird, hooked on the bite, form as dough, Eucharist from yeast of hands, grows and seasons longing. As breath on a mirror conjures, mist-blurred autumn moon, and birdsong's key unlocks vaults of every morning. But what do I profess? I'll say only this. It's poetic origami. No cuts to the paper, yet all the lines fold in. So that was Profession. I also, you know, as I came as an immigrant, and I am from South Asia, I'm from Pakistan, and I wrote a poem. It is in my third book of poetry, Pointillism, and it's a somewhat political poem. Hopefully, that's fine. It's called the United States of Amnesia. The United States of Amnesia. Welcome to the United States of Amnesia, where the average attention span is an albatross around the neck of history, drowning in largesse of half-calf mocha frappuccino. At every other corner, nine-tenths of teeth submerge in this melting pot, Super Bowl of guillotined Halloween, cropped and photoshopped to the death, and the belt rolls a clockwork orange. Clones and minions man the phones, ringing off the hook like an armless pirate with his peddling finger on the Twitter, out to abduct you, lonely, only immigrant child, America. This illegal election year, unlike any other in living erasure. Welcome to the dystopian states of amnesia, to the gloom of the homeless underpasses, to the panhandling flutes drowned out in the tropics of the nocturnal subterranean. Washed up on your shores like a bottle with a pent-up ocean in my bladder, memory is the only currency I hold. I hold the infected blankets up to the light. I know the smell of genocide. I have watched women shamed as witches, watched them fall like dominoes on a Salem noon. I have met Sally Hemings and the strange fruit of your history, America. I have fallen in your uncivil war of 1,001 episodes. This beast you thought you tamed, he prowls the profiled night wearing a police uniform. Beneath your bipolar indifference, a glacial, racial, ice age is dying. Unseen below decks, in red bullet points, in blue moans, while a white, white sea sails on. Since I've United States of Amnesia is a poem about where I am, and I thought it was only fitting to also read, even though I'm here as an immigrant, and also still very connected to the issues of where I come from, to the repression that is ongoing against any kind of dissent, and I actually received political asylum in the U.S. in 1996, and I am very connected to what is going on in Pakistan. And in recently, there's been an uptick in the persecution of bloggers, and it's an ongoing menace. And I wrote a poem about it, which is called In the City of Proper Nouns. And if you just give me a moment, I will get that together. In the City of Proper Nouns. In the City of Proper Nouns, those who spoke of desires other than objects lived perilously, as if speaking was leaping from building to building. Their words, tiny fireflies, dancing in the gathering darkness, slipped through the keyholes, trying to shine a light in the caves of closed minds. Those who knew nothing but names in the city of proper nouns identified them easily, disappeared them like an eraser does, the faulty but true mathematics of 1 + 1 = 1. Erased them wherever they stood or spoke or marched or laughed or raised a glass of laughter to their lips. The rulers of the city of proper nouns hated and feared the lovers who spoke only of you and me, because desire cannot be given an ID card, nor the wind a plot of land. The masters of the city of proper nouns, who like to remain nameless themselves, rule with an iron hand, an invisible line you cannot cross, or else you are crossed out yourselves. The rulers of the city of proper nouns ask only that you maintain a chain link of silence.
Okay. This is called pause. To take a breath, pause. Lift your finger as needle of seismograph from pulse of apocalypse, charred carcass of a baby kangaroo in mid-flight. To pause, to close weary eyes against the blinding warning signs ever so briefly, because the heart can only take so much plight, and like a flower, must lean sometimes to the light. Smell the fragile stargazer lilies trembling all the while in dismal headlines that bumblebees are tumbling towards extinction, and despots stand smug among us, smiling. Puppeteers pull strings, watch the fight. If we have indeed reached the end of days in the age of the Anthropocene, obscene in unrelenting greed, wrecked the Holy Grail, only planet, cup out of which all must drink or die, pause, even then, sip delight in the last sunset, feel its blush seep into your skin before the final bell of darkness sounds and fades each and every sentient being tonight. Thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. I'd like to bring in your colleagues here, friends
hey,
from around the world.
Congratulations, Sophia. What lovely poems. And
thank you so much.
And you read them magnificently. Magnificently.
Thank you.
And I know Michael will let
sorry about
that.
The...
Out. That's okay. That's
great. What a wonderful wordsmith.
Great.
What a wonderful wordsmith indeed.
All right. We'll be right back with Christine DeLuca from the Shetland Islands, Great Britain.
Hello. Oh.
Michael?
Hold on 1 second here. We are back. We are back with World Poetry Day. I'm really excited about what's taken place so far, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I'd like to bring in Christine.
Hello.
Hello, Christine.
Can you hear me? Hello, can
yes.
you hear me? Oh, good.
Perfectly.
Wonderful.
Perfectly.
Good. Excellent. Right. Shall I just
begin
then?
Yes, just begin. Yes, Please.
You want me just to begin? Okay. Well, most of the poems I'll read will be in Shetlandic, but I'll give an English version first. And the first poem is about language acquisition and the links between my mother tongue and its Nordic cousins. Glints of origin. I savoured your early words as they came. Whenever they surprised your mouth, helped shape them with you, gather them. How many generations of children have quarried those same words, found all needful sounds around them? And seafarers who landed here threw in from unfamiliar places words carried on ocean's shifting tides, wave-worn, wind-riven words, their edges hacked off, making a blend, a tongue, fit for saga and for psalm. Rummage in it, dig away, and you'll find veins in the stone, bright glints of origin. Glimpses of origin, I savoured thy early words as they came, whenever they surprised thy mouth, help it shape them with thee, hent them. Foo many generations of bairns has quarried that same words, fun a needful sounds around them. And seafarers that landed here, weaved in fae unken earths, words carried on ocean shifting tides, wave-worn, wind-riven words, their ages shaved off, making a meld, a tongue fit for saga and for psalm, rumps within it, hawk a wah, and dolphin veins of disdain, bright glimpse of origin. The ocean wraps Shetland round and is very much in command. In this poem, the sea is represented as male and the land as female. The sea, beloved one. The sea's hand explores the trembling limb of land. Daily she welcomes his comings and goings. There are sighs and swallowings in their secret tryst, a ripping up and letting go in their creating a blowhole or a gill. Sometimes he's high-spirited and heaves himself far, far into her till she's soaking, pleading. Long might he seek her out, long become one with her, to keep her young and vital. She's fairest there within his touch, her body decorated with sea pinks, bouquets of tormentil, violet and squill. She'll age gently, loosen his grip on her, expect a more gentle lover. The sea, hjarta. The sea's hand trivels the trembling limb of land. Daily she welcomes his comings and goings. The sochs and quilks about their secret tryst, arriving and letting go athin their making o a blahol or a gyo. Sometimes he's fulsked and weaves himself far, far in teller till she's sabin. Pluton, lang might he seek her out, lang meld with her, to keep her young and vital. She's fairest there athin his touch, her frame busket with banks flowers, bouquets of earth bark, violet and squill. She'll age pretty wise, louse his grip upon her, lappin' a mere gentle lover. Weather in Shetland can be very changeable, even in late summer. This is probably a love poem. Summer lightning. Eyes narrow at the sun's stare. In the lee, summer's dregs. Round a corner, a ruffian north wind frisks us. The sky blackens, lightens. Hold fast through making and breaking, swithering time. Keep close what you have, a delusion, but more real than this downpour, rain bouncing off the earth so drenched you laugh. Split the difference with one another. By twilight, the lip of day trembles, heart in the mouth. Share the afterglow as further and further the sun hides. Hirst blinks. In glindered stour and sun, Ida lee simmer drakes. Round the corner a trooker o'er north wind frisks with. The luft blackens, lightens, head fast draw makin and bracken swithering time. Keep close what you hae, a delusion, but mair rail is this duntum. Rain standing off of the earth, say drook it you gaff. Ging half us wi ain another, be mirtnin, the lip of day trimmels, heart to the mouth. Share the glood as further and further the sun hides her. Shetland straddles the 60th parallel and is a place where migrating birds are common. I wrote this poem when I reached 60, so it's also about aging. At 60, that line where birds, exhausted, cross a threshold, winter at their back, or a happy intimation of summer before them. Where, along the 60th parallel, bird song on resonating strings trembles on a northern palate. Hanging into 80 years is listening for that line. Another season of song. It's pushing against the door, lifting the latch, taking the fiddle from the wall, and tuning what's left to make the notes. Fingers reach further, gently compensate for the missing string, draw out the melody. At 60, that line where birds, hurless, cross a threshold tree, winter at their back, or a scurrilous simmer afford them. Where, along the 60th parallel, sheerling on ringing strings, vimmers on a northern pallet. Hanging in to 80 year is hearken for that line. Another season of sang, it's pushing for nence the door, lifting the snake, tacking the fiddle doon, and tuning what's left to mak the knots. Fingers wreck farther, trivel the missing string, ties out the melody. A short contemplative poem just written in English. Sullivan is a beautiful sugarloaf mountain in the northwest highlands of Scotland. What's in a name? If and when I have mislaid my name and stare at you disconcertingly, let me spend a day parked by Sullivan, perplexed by broken water. Turn my calendar to the mountain season and set my watch by shadows on the loch. Forgive me if I lose the reason that we came or my gaze clouds in a codfish kind of way or if the name I chose for you eludes me. I'll still sense mountain, water, love. Another love poem that comes out of the natural world. I had found a perfect big heart-shaped stone on a beach, but couldn't take it back home on the little plane, so I wedged it into the cliff. The poem has a geological title, Discontinuity. I could blame the way the sea has smoothed the stones, the silk of touch, the sifting, leaving, And will the heart be there when I come back? Or I could blame the ringed plover. He was clear which way to go. This way now. No looking over your shoulder. Tide doesn't wait. See the way the swill of joy has drained. Dance today. Tomorrow you slip into eternity. Or I could blame the silence that fills you to bursting point with all the words that could be said, but you hold back. It's what happens when you step in time, but sense a fault line trembling through you, this side or that. Only the sea can cry and sing at the same time, shade and light, cobalt, ultramarine, and then the breaking wave, an enticing froth of white. Discontinuity. I could blame the why the sea is smooth, the stains, the silk touch, the wailing, laving, and will the hurt be there when I come back? Or I could blame the sandy loon. He was clear quad white gang, this why no day looking o'er your shudder, tide does no wet. See the why the swell of joy is drained, dance the day, the morn you slip into eternity. Or I could blame the hush, it fills you till you lick the burst, we are the words that could be said, but you had back. That's what happens when you step in time, but sense a fault line vimmering through you, this side or that. Only the sea can greet and sing at the same time, shade and light, cobalt, ultramarine, and under luna brack, a ties, a fresh white. This poem came out of a walk to Feyland in Shetland, to the site of a 19th century remote fishing station with ruins of fishermen's bodies. The wooden six-oared boats, the Sixerns, used to be pulled up at the end of the fishing season into noosts, sheltered hollows or stone housing well above the high tide level. Tusk is a cod-like fish of the ling family. Fish were split, salted and dried on the stony beaches and piled into pyramids or steeples. Beachwork. We neither split nor weighed the tusk, nor laid them out to dry, but amused ourselves on the beach, left a pyramid of stones for the ocean. We didn't prop up the yule, kept her anchored in our memory, sat down in the bosom of her noost, shared our food for the journey. We neither cut nor cured a peat, nor gathered driftwood, but wondered about hearthstones, fires within summer bodies. Few words spoken, none needed. You selected two pretty stones for me and walked behind me. Beachwork. We neither split nor weighed the tusk, nor laid them out to dry, but played was up at the beach, left the steeple of stains for the ocean. We never shored at the Sixern, kept her lying off in our memory, set was to the bows of your noost, shared were fair the net. We neither cut nor cured a pit, nor gathered rack, but wind hath on heart stains, fires athin summer boots. Nae words spoken, name needed, to weld me twa bonny stains, and waka to hunt me. Hand knitting was a mainstay of the Shetland economy for many years. All young women had to learn the various processes and patterns, some of which are mentioned in the poem. The lace patterns are often based on shapes in the natural world. But it's a love poem. song of the knitter. I tease out your ravels, comb and card you, spin you, foot on treadle, set your wool rolls trembling, till that continuous thread, your voice is smooth and strong. I colour you from swatches of summer cliffs, match all the shades of a breaking sea. You hold me, my hanks, your arms wide. I wind my ball of wool, reel you in, plain and puddle you, slip my stitches over you, knit you into my cockle shell, my crest of the wave, into my rippled diamonds, my double scallops, into all my edgings, basques and borders, into the body of my garment. No one will ever know where the seams are, where you begin, where I end. Wrap me up and take me, spin my wheel, turn my heel, lay me up, pick me up, knit my first tight row, graft me off and wash me, shape me, wear me. Sang the Macar. I ties out thy raffles, raid and care thee, kami wheel and spin thee, set thy rowers merlin, till that on broken tree thy voice is slight and strang. I colour thee with swatches of simmer banks, match a' the shades within a lunar brack. Thou hadst me hanks, thy arms white. I wind me clue, reel thee in, plain and purl thee, slip me loops up o'er thee, mak thee into me cockle shell, me crest of the wave, into me rippled diamonds, me double scallops, into a' me agings, basques and borders, into the body of me marking. Naebody will ever ken wha the seams is, wha thou begins, where I end. Hap me and tap me, ca me wheel, turn me heel, lay me up, pick me up, mak me sweary gang, graft me off and score me, dress me, wear me. I think that's possibly enough, is it?
All right. Beautiful, beautiful, exquisite work. Let me bring in the fellow poets. Hold on one second.
Okay.
So wonderful. Such wonderful, musical, exquisite cadence. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yes, you've given us all inspiration to renew our energies, our linguistic energies, you know, the vocabulary, the words you use. It's such a rich dictionary you have in your...
Well, it's a little different, yes. I love it in my mouth. It feels good in my mouth.
Yeah. You taste your poems, yes. I don't think I need to eat dinner today. Quite satisfied just listening to you.
That's good.
I am so glad you're here, Christine. I really am at work.
And
let's take a brief break. Excuse me?
It's quite clear. It's coming over clearly.
It's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
That's
the
lovely.
Day is
good.
Perfect.
Good.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Okay.
We are back. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with some incredible, incredible talent. And I don't know what to say. What I'd like to do, though, is to bring Indran on to read two poems by Mervyn Taylor.
Yes, sir. You know, Mervyn's in Trinidad. He's listening to the program.
but the connection is slow and he's not able to connect directly. So Mervyn sent me these two poems. The first one is from his new book, forthcoming book, Country of Warm Snow. And it has a short epigraph for C.K. You stop by, feet swollen from sleeping, sitting up. When I think of how we entered the city, separating through the streets and the months after, I picture the state you had gotten lost in, east, west, perhaps one of the dry ones like Nevada, never afraid to dream your idea of America remained what we'd seen in the movies, fields where men keep rounding the bases, cheeks red with October chill. That first winter, you said the snow looked warm. And now someone's promised you a cot in a basement. You grin with delight as if the offer has redeemed whatever wrong was done to you. And, you know, Mervyn's been one of my teachers, perhaps my most important one, and one of his teachers, and mine too, was Kamau Brathwaite. And Mervyn wrote this poem for Kamau, who passed into the ocean, into the sky, just a few weeks ago. It's called Nation Talk, and it has an epigraph from Kamau Brathwaite. You does thank God your bubby's still big. You mentioned bubbies, but no woman could say you insulted them or made them shame unless they were already ashamed of themselves, of their mother and father. No one could say you made them feel abandoned, that you saw them crying and passed them straight, or didn't take bread from your mouth and give them. When you sang Limbo, we knew full well it was both dance and prayer you meant, the face passing an inch below the fiery bar, legs trembling as we came back up. And when you saw those heads bob like coconuts in the Caribbean Sea, separated from bodies, we knew not to run, but to wait till the tide brought them back to us. Two poems by Mervyn Taylor from Trinidad and Tobago, from Port of Spain, where he's listening as I recite those two. Beautiful pieces. Mervyn,
Constantine.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mervyn, very, yes, very much. Constantine, would you like to share?
Oh, I would be honored if I could share.
Please do so.
Of course, my name is, of course, I'm part Native American, so I may have a different perspective of the world as some of the other artists here, but it was certainly interesting listening to the mix here, especially the lady reciting for the Shetland. I really appreciate Native dialects. But anyway, good luck on figuring out what that means. Anyway, this, when I read, is kind of my trademark. I say fade in when I begin, and when I'm done, I say fade out so people don't cut in on me, if I may, sir.
Yes.
All right. This poem is written not about one particular incident, but is written about mass shootings and killings that we hear too often on the radio, on television. Madmen, where people have died for no reason. I call it the massacre. Fade in. Gather at the feet of the mithril weaver, and I shall tell you a tale of sadness. I call it the massacre. Forever shall I recall the day, that day my spirits fell within this broad-hearted soul within, and my heart skipped a beat when I heard the tale. I heard of the massacre, of the killing field upon messenger driven by a black wind of deeds that never, never should have come to be. Some expressed confusion, but I knew exactly what to do. because some said that things should be canceled, and silence, I suppose, is the best response in a truth, a moment, a silence for the memory of the fallen. It's not only needed, it is demanded. It is demanded by ideals and by the most fundamental of moralities. But, these are the times in the course of lives and men and women alike that we show our mettle, the value of the simple state of being a human being. I say it is time when those voices now silence that cry for a voice among those who remain be heard. This is the very time when a voice of reason is needed most. It is a season, this now, this time that we now live in, that a sickness has come, has covered this land, this country, this world, that we all have to share. And it has become stained with the blood of the innocent. And people ask why. What causes someone to kill women, children, complete strangers that have done no wrong? When you hear about these gunmen, these murders, were there any purity? What is the source of the obscenity, the madness that brings the sadness? Where does it start? Where does it begin? I say it starts with you and me, my friend. I say it is time we do become our brother's keeper. It is time we do call for equality of a law. The reason men do these things is because of the inequity of the justice system. It is time rich who operate above the law and lawyers who prefer justice be held to the same level of accountability that all the rest of us are. It is time that justice was the same for all. It is time that law should be blind, and it is only then that a person's true colors will ever really be seen before it is too late. And to whom much is given, much is required, as I said. So just remember, when you point a finger, don't forget the three that are pointing back to you. So don't tell me what is not required, for my friend, much is required, for much more will be required of you later, should you know nothing at all. So write, speak, pass on these words that will champion the truest of causes. For we are the bards, we are the voices, we are the poets, and the world needs us. And morality demands of us to exercise this gift of the turn of phrase, of gift of gab, not to elevate ourselves in vanity, but to raise us all in unity as one world, one race, the human race. Not to impose our views as a superior intellect, but to instead relay that elementary truth that all men have in their heart, that all good people know, and that is what is the right thing to do, but because of sorrow have only forgotten. And you need simply to be reminded of it. For you cannot unsee what a blind eye has been turned to, the mind's eye has yet brought to be. So go now, my dearest of friends and wordsmiths, for your brothers and your sisters, your world await you. Fade out.
All right. Very powerful. I'd like to bring in everyone.
Thank you.
We're at the end of the program. And I'd like to thank everyone for, hold on 1 second here. Here we are. We're at the end of the program, and I'd just like to thank everyone for your participation. Any thoughts from the crowd?
That's fascinating.
Fascinating. And yes. thank you, Michael, for putting this together. You're doing an amazing gift you're giving all of these listeners, you know, and I know this program will be heard and rebroadcast, and we're just deeply grateful to you for including us and giving us a chance to celebrate poetry on this World Poetry Day. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Indra, for being the person who brought everyone together. So again, it's due to you that we have wonderful talent today.
Thank you.
All right, everyone.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. That's the end of our program.
Okay.
And we'll return next year on March 21st for another World Poetry Day. Thank you so much.
All right. Take
bye
care.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right.